vidvinavadhi tamastu ma vidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Excuse me. Welcome back. We'll continue our study of chapter 18. We're going to do something a little different and special today also, which I'll introduce in just a moment. We'll begin, though, as always, with recitation, beginning with verse 65. We're right at the final part of chapter 18. Repeat after me, please. Manmana bhava madbhakto, manmana bhava madhyaji mam namaskuru, madhyaji mam. Mame vaishyasi satyam te, mame vaishyasi sat pratija. Sorry. Pratijane priyosi me, pratijane priyo. Sarva dharman parityajya, sarva dharman parityajya. Mamekam sharanam vraja, mamekam sharanam. Aham tva sarva papebhyo, aham tva sarva. Mokshayashyami mashuchaha, mokshayashyami. Hirante natapaskaya, hirante natapas. Na bhaktaya kadachana, na bhaktaya. Na chashushrushave vachyam, na chashushrushave. Na cha mam yobhya suyati, na cha mam yobhya yahidam paramam guhyam, yahidam paramam. Madbhakte swabhidhasyati, madbhakte swabhidhasyati. Bhaktim mayi param kritva, bhaktim maya. Mame vaishyatya samshayah, mame vaishyatya samshayah. Nacha tasman manushyeshu, nacha chasman. Kashchan me priyakrittamah, kashchan me priyakrit. Bhavita nacha me tasmad, bhavita nacha me. Anyah priyataro bhuvi, anyah priyataro. Adhyeshyate chayahimam, adhyeshyate chayah. Dharmyam samvaram havayoh, dharmyam samvaram. Jnana yajnena tenaham, jnana yajne. Ishtasyamiti me matihi, ishtasyamiti me. Shraddhavananasuyascha, shraddhavananasuyascha. Shunuyarapi yo naraha, shunuyarapi. Sopi mukta shubhan lokan, sopi mukta shubhan. Prapnuyat punya karmanam, prapnuyat punya. Kachade tachrutam partha, kachade tachrutam. Twayaika grena chetasa, twayaika grena. Kachadagnana sammohaha, kachadagnana. Pranashtaste dhananjaya, pranashtaste harjna uvacha, harjna nashto moha smritir labdha, nashto moha smritir labdha. Twat prasadan mayachuta, twat prasadat mayan. Stitosmi gata sandehaha, stitosmi gata sandehaha. Karishye vachanam tava, karishye vachanam tava. Very good. Before we return to the text where we left off, we had actually finished up through verse 67, but I want to return today to verse 66 and a little bit, some prior verse, one prior verse in particular, to deal with a question that has come up over the past week. Several people have contacted me, either in person or by email, with questions relating to that topic of free will. And I'd like to return to that to make sure that we are very clear and secure in our understanding of what is the relationship of free will, especially, and to put it in context, when we saw in the last class is Charma Shloka, Sarva Dharman Pratyajya, Mamekam Sharanam Vraja. Charma means last, and it's called Charma Shloka because it's the last verse of Sri Krishna's instructions. He continues talking a little bit further in the text, but it's the last verse of his spiritual instruction, and also it contains an essential message, a message which could be considered the essence of the entire Bhagavad Gita. In the last class, remember, we said that chapter 2, the spiritual instruction, began with Sri Krishna telling Arjuna, hey Arjuna, you are grieving unnecessarily. And then that statement, that's verse 11 in chapter 2. O Arjuna, you are grieving unnecessarily. And finally, Sri Krishna concludes that discussion with this verse, therefore, Ma Shuchaha. Therefore, there's no reason to worry. There's no reason to grieve. Why? Mam Ekam Sharanam Vraja. Because of seeking me, accepting me as your ultimate refuge. Sharanam, as your refuge. I don't want to spend a lot of time on this verse. We discussed it at quite some length in the last class. And a phrase I use several times in describing it is to say that everything is in Ishvara's hands. Which is what this says. Sarva dharman, parityaja, giving up everything. Everything means everything. Everything includes the world, includes your body and mind, even includes your free will. Sarva dharman, everything. Parityaja, giving up everything, Mam Ekam Sharanam Vraja, seek me as your one and true refuge. Where does free will fit in? If everything is in Ishvara's hands, if we surrender everything to Ishvara, then what is the role of our free will and effort? And this question is even more perplexing because we saw this very interesting verse, verse 61, which was in the prior class 2 weeks ago. Let's see this verse. Ishvara Sarva Bhutanam, the God of all creatures, Hriddeshe Arjuna, Hriddeshe Arjuna Tishtati, abides in the hearts of all. Brahmayan, controlling Sarva Bhutani, controlling all creatures who are Yantra Arudhani, as though they are machines. Mayaya, by his power of Maya, Sri Krishna, or Ishvara, we should say, Ishvara controls all beings as if they were machines. We talked about this verse in some detail. And I said that in spite of its surface meaning, it doesn't negate free will. Now, some of you, I'm sure, are not convinced, which is fine. So that's what we want to do today. How do you reconcile a verse like this that says all beings are yantra arudhani, as if they are fixed to machines? Arudha means lifted up, literally. Yantra arudhani, lifted up or attached to a machine. If we are attached to machines, and if Ishvara Brahmayan, causing the motion, causing to move, Brahmayan Sarva Bhutani, causing all beings to move, as though they were machines. And a very common example that's given in this regard is puppets being controlled by strings. Now, how to reconcile both of these verses with the existence of free will. And just to set the stage, we cannot be so quick to dismiss free will. If you remember our discussion 2 weeks ago, we said that the entire doctrine of karma and reincarnation is based on free will. If you want to dismiss free will, then you have a Hinduism without the doctrine of karma. You have Hindus without reincarnation, because it all depends on free will. Karma, an action, is that which is intentionally committed. It's an act of free will. If you have no free will, you don't commit any karma. If you don't commit any karma, what is this, all this punya papa stuff about? What is reincarnation about? So you can see that we can't be so quick to dismiss free will. On the other hand, how to reconcile free will with this verse 61 and with verse 66. We're going to take verse 61 first. We're going to return to this. It'll take a major part of our class, but we have time. We're almost at the end of the Bhagavad Gita, and I think this is very important. So let's spend some time discussing this. I want to share with you a very happy accident. I was studying right now. In every morning I do some study, and my current study is that of Panchadashi. Panchadashi is a Vedanta text by one Swami Vidyaranya. He lived, I think, in the 15th century. And a very profound, and in some places technical text. And I happen to be studying chapter 6. And I'm studying, and this is yesterday morning. I'm telling you the truth. Yesterday morning, I'm studying chapter 6. And what do I come across? Verse 71. Ishvara sarva bhutanam hridaye sherjuna artishtati brahmaya what brahmayan sarva bhutani yantra rudhani mayaya. Yes. Vidyaranya quotes this verse 61. Not only does he quote it, he expounds upon it, he expands it, he explains it in a number of verses. I'd like to share those insights with you, because he explains it very, I think, much more clearly than I did 2 weeks ago. But this is Swami Vidyaranya, who's really he's a great teacher, absolutely great teacher. And his text, Panchadashi, is a great text. Quick aside, we're going to study chapter 7 of this text, starting in fall, in our Tuesday evening Vedanta class. So let's see, what does Sri Vidyaranya have to say here? So first of all, he explains. So again, the meaning of this verse, Ishvaraha sarva bhutanam, the God of all creatures, who is hrit deshe, abiding in the heart. Abiding in the heart means what? Hrit means buddhi, intellect. Abiding in the intellect. Tishtati, he abides in the intellect, in your mind which is the seat of free will, right? Free will belongs to what part of you? Belongs to your body? Belongs to your emotions, manas? Belongs to your intellect, buddhi, the seat of free will, decision-making, and willful action. The seat of decision-making and willful action is your buddhi. And this verse correctly says that the God of the cosmos, tishtati, dwells, abides in your buddhi, hridayeshe, and abiding there, brahmayan, causes the action, sarva bhutani, for all creatures, causes all creatures to act, all creatures who are yantra arudhani, as though they were puppets, mayaya, by Ishvara's power of maya. Now, to explain this, he actually goes word by word. Let's start with hridayeshe, the one who abides in your heart. When we say Ishvara abides in your heart and controls everything, what does that mean? Does it mean, is there some little little person inside pushing buttons and pulling levers? Do you remember? I don't know if you've watched this famous old movie what is the name of that one? What is that? Over the Rainbow, Julie Garland? What is it? Wizard of Oz. In that movie, Wizard of Oz, remember when they're in the big hall and all of this guy, the Oz comes, and Oz is this all-powerful entity. But behind the curtain, remember that scene? Behind the curtain is this little wizard guy. This little wizard guy is working all the levers and buttons, and he's causing this all-powerful Oz to appear before the characters. Anyway, I don't know if you've seen that. Do you think there's a wizard inside, pushing buttons and pulling levers, causing make Swami's right arm go up, make Swami's right arm go down? Is that when we say that Ishvara abides in your heart, causing you to move? Let's not have such a naive idea. What does that mean to say that Ishvara abides in your heart, causing you to move? In the prior two verses, in Panchadashi, the two verses that precede this one, Sri Vidyaranya gives a wonderful metaphor. I won't give you the verses, but I'll give you the essence of it. He says, Ishvara abides in your buddhi like threads abide in cloth. So this is a metaphor he gives. Ishvara abides in your buddhi like threads abide in cloth. Are there any threads in his cloth? Of course. And he explains in two verses. He says, if these threads spread out, it causes the cloth to spread out. If these threads contract, it causes the cloth to contract, right? Absolutely. So not only do threads abide in this cloth, but the threads also control the cloth. That's that word brahmayan, causing the movement, controlling the motion, brahmayan. So this is a metaphor. Just as threads abide in this cloth, if threads spread out, the cloth spreads out. If threads contract, the cloth contracts. In the same way, Ishvara abides in your buddhi. How? Like threads in the cloth. Notice, thread is the essence of the cloth. The context, by the way, of this discussion, I should have given you two words. I need to give you two words before we can proceed. In chapter 6, Vidyaranya is talking about Ishvara as Antaryami. Many of you were in our Brihadaranyaka class. We talked extensively of Antaryami. It literally means inner controller. And certainly, that's what this Gita verse talks about, the same thing. The one who is hriddeshe, the one who abides where? Within. And the one brahmayan sarvabhutani, causing all creatures to act. So hriddeshe, abiding in the heart. Brahmayan sarvabhutani, causing all beings to act. So antaryami is definitely the right word. But I'm going to put this word on the board and then sit down and explain it. Because in these two verses, Vidyaranya Swami explains that antaryami in this context means, and I'm sorry for the technical language, but it's important, upadana karana. Upadana karanam literally means material cause, material So what is he saying? If we're talking about threads abiding in this cloth, to be inside and to control is antaryami. So if threads are in the cloth, inside, inner, and also if the threads expand, the cloth expands. If the threads contract, the cloth. So controlling. Controlling as well. So we could say that with regard to this cloth, the antaryami, the inner reality that's in control, is the threads. Now, that's the same expression we use for upadana karana, the material cause, the stuff out of which cloth is woven is thread. Upadana karana means the material stuff out of which something is made. So here, in this text, Sri Vidyaranya is making a connection that we may not see. A connection between antaryami, the inner controller, and upadana karanam, the material cause. Do you see how they're one and the same? This cloth is nothing but threads. The cause for the existence of this cloth is threads. That's what the word upadana karana means. The underlying reality because of which this cloth exists, that's upadana karana. That's material cause. But Sri Vidyaranya points out that in this case, material cause is the same as antaryami. Why? It's inside. And it's also in control. This is a new connection that we may not have seen before, which Sri Vidyaranya makes here. And after explaining this cloth and thread thing, he then introduces the Bhagavad Gita verse to demonstrate how the Ishvara who abides in your buddhi is within, we get that, is in control, we're trying to explore that. But further, the new information that Sri Vidyaranya is giving us here is that Ishvara is the upadana karana for your mind, for your buddhi, for your intellect. This is his explanation. By the way, if this seems a little bit heavy, this is a pretty sophisticated text. Hang in there, you will get it, and I think you'll find it's very valuable and helpful. What is he saying? That just as threads are the reality because of which this cloth exists, in the same way Ishvara is a reality because of which your intellect exists. Well, of course, Ishvara is a reality because of which everything exists. Your buddhi is part of everything, so Ishvara is a reality because of which your buddhi exists. But now we go further. Notice, when we say that when Vidyaranya says that when threads expand, the cloth expands, it pretty much destroys that idea of the wizard pulling levers and pushing buttons. That's the point. We want to get rid of that image completely when we say that Ishvara is antaryami, the inner controller, when he brahmayan sarvabhutani, when he causes all beings to act. It's not like Ishvara is some entity inside of you pushing buttons and pulling levers, but rather, Ishvara is the reality of your intellect. Watch this. Just as threads are the reality of this cloth, in the same way, Ishvara is the reality of your intellect. When your intellect makes a decision, the reality of your intellect is Ishvara. Ishvara, manifest as your intellect, makes decisions. Can I say that again? Ishvara, manifest as your intellect, makes decisions. Threads, manifest as this cloth, expands and contracts. Right? You're with me? I know this is a little tough, but bear with me. Threads in the form of this cloth expands and contracts. Ishvara, in the form of your intellect, makes decisions. Ishvara, in the form of your intellect, is free will. Free will is a quality of your intellect. It's a quality of Ishvara. We'll see that more. We'll lead up to this. So this is just the first part. Hridayeshe, the one who abides in the heart, the one who Brahmayan, controls everything. There's one verse I wanted to share with you. Yeah, this one. This is several verses later. Vijnanamaya rupena tat pravritti swarupataha swashaktya ishaha vikriyate mayaya brahmanam hi tata. Ishvara, who is vijnanamaya rupena, in the form of your intellect. Ishvara, in the form of your intellect, swashaktya mayaya, through his power of maya, Ishvara, in the form of your intellect, through his power of maya, vikriyate, undergoes change, and brahmanam, causes the motion of your mind. Tat pravritti swarupataha, as the underlying cause for your mind's activity. Now, I'll explain that a little bit. Ishvara is manifest as the entire universe. Ishvara is not some inert material. Ishvara is this highly intelligent stuff out of which the entire universe is fashioned. Not only is the entire universe fashioned from the intelligent stuff of Ishvara, your intellect is fashioned from the intelligent stuff of Ishvara. If Ishvara were not intelligent, how could you be intelligent? Because of Ishvara's intelligence, you are intelligent. Ishvara is manifest as your buddhi, as your intellect. That's why we have intelligence, is because Ishvara is manifest as our intelligence. Our intelligence includes the powers of our mind, include the power of free will. Is that not true? But the power of free will then can be attributed to Ishvara. Here's the explanation. This cloth can expand and contract. How did this cloth get the power to expand and contract? Got that power from the threads, right? This cloth has the power to expand and contract because the threads have the power to expand and contract. Your intellect has the power of free will. Why? It comes from Ishvara. Ishvara certainly has the power of will. If Ishvara didn't have the power of will, why would the universe have come into existence? Ishvara wills the universe into existence. There are many scriptural statements which talk about that. Ishvara wills the universe into existence. If Ishvara can will the universe into existence, Ishvara can create free will in your mind, in your intellect. And that's what this verse is saying. It says that Ishvara, swashaktya mayaya, through his power, through his capacity, what does he do? He, vikriyate, undergoes changes, and brahmanam, he causes the motion of your mind. A little bit more. After a couple of verses, then Vidyaranya quotes a verse, another verse from the Mahabharata, not from the Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita is part of Mahabharata, right? So he's quoting from elsewhere in the Mahabharata. In fact, this is something you've heard me quote before, where Duryodhana says, Janami dharmam cha nacha me pravrittihi, Janami adharmam nachame nivruttihi. You've heard me translate that. When Duryodhana says, I know what is right, I can't make myself follow it. I know what is wrong, adharma, I can't prevent myself from doing that. Famous statement. And I've used that in this class before, but the emphasis here is on, that's the first half of the verse. What about the second half of the verse? That's why Vidyaranya quotes that verse for the reason of the second half, where Duryodhana says, Kenapi devena hridi sthitena, because of there is some, you know, why is it that Duryodhana knows what is right, can't do it? Why is it that he knows what is wrong, he can't prevent himself from doing it? He says, there is some kind of deity in my heart. Hridi sthitena, some kind of deity that exists in my heart, yata, because of which asmi niyuktaha, because of which I am controlled, and tata karomi, and act in this way. Tata karomi, I act in this way. Why? He says, niyuktaha asmi, I am controlled. Niyuktaha, I'm controlled by what? Kenapi devena, hridi sthitena. I'm controlled by some kind of deity in my heart. Now that's sort of what is being said here. So Duryodhana is complaining that you know, I can't control myself because there's some intelligent force in my heart which is causing all my behavior. But now we're right back to the problem with free will. Where is Duryodhana's free will? Before I answer the question, remember the example we're giving here, the example that Vidyaranya is quoting here, is the example of a wise person, or as Sri Swami Dayananda would say, a person who is not wise, but a person who is otherwise. Duryodhana is definitely otherwise. So Duryodhana is complaining, I don't control everything. Everything is being done by this intelligence in my heart. Duryodhana is, to use the American expression, copping out. And let me show you Vidyaranya's response to Duryodhana's statement. Vidyaranya says, Ishaha purushakarasya rupena api vivartate. He says, in the first half, he says, this is no reason to negate the existence of free will, is the first half of the verse. Duryodhana's statement does not negate the existence of free will. Why? Vidyaranya explains, why? Because Ishaha purushakarasya rupena vivartate. Because Ishvara is present in Duryodhana's heart as the power of free will. Wow. Ishvara. Duryodhana says, Ishvara is in control of everything. Ishvara dwells in my heart. Ishvara is in control of everything. Vidyaranya says, Ishvara is present in Duryodhana's heart as the power of free will. Which means Duryodhana has free will, but he denies its existence. He doesn't accept its existence. And this is part of Duryodhana's problem, his failure to understand that he is endowed by Ishvara with free will. Therefore, he must employ that free will. If Ishvara, let's wrap this up, this verse. If Ishvara gave you hands, should you use your hands? Think so. Ishvara gave you feet. Ishvara gave you a mouth. We use that all the time. Ishvara gave us eyes. All right, we have all these capacities that Ishvara gave us. Ishvara gives us free will. What can we say? Now, coming back to this verse, now we can see when he says this Ishvaraha, this Lord, Sarvabhutanam, the Lord of all creatures, Hu Hrideshe, the one who abides in the heart, Brahmayan Sarvabhutani, and causes all beings to act, Ishvara in your intellect causes you to act. Does that mean you don't have free will? Ishvara in your intellect as your power of free will causes you to act. Do you get it now? Ishvara is present in you, causing you to act. Fine, that's what this verse says. But Ishvara is present within you as your own power of free will. Everything is a manifestation of Ishvara, including the power of free will. Therefore, to say I have no free will is like saying I have no hands. I have hands. Ishvara gave me hands. I have free will. Ishvara gave me free will. So this is the key. He says, Ishaha, the God of the cosmos, Purusha Karasya Rupena, in the form of Purushakara, in the form of human effort, in the form of free will. Ishvara, in the form of free will, abides in your intellect. So, do you have free will or not? Yes. But whose is it really? In the meditation session, I said, I have hands. But really speaking, if I understand the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita, these are Ishvara's hands, Ishvara's legs, Ishvara's mind, Ishvara's free will, which now leads us to understand verse 66. Before we go to verse 66, is this a little bit clear now? Even though this verse seems to say that Ishvara is like a puppet maker, what it really says is Ishvara is manifest as your power of free will. So who's pulling the strings? You are. But you are pulling the strings with the free will given to you by Ishvara. Like, I can hold my glasses with the hands given to me by Ishvara. In the same way, I can make decisions exercising the free will given to me by Ishvara. Okay, so I think we've reconciled this. And the last thing we want to see then is coming back to verse 66, where we said, everything is in Ishvara's hands. When I say, everything is in Ishvara's hands, everything means everything, including my free will. My hands are Ishvara's hands. My legs are Ishvara's legs. My eyes are Ishvara's eyes. My free will is Ishvara's will. My hands are given by Ishvara, legs, eyes. My free will is given by Ishvara. So when I say everything is Ishvara or everything is Ishvara's hands, it's recognizing that the free will present in my mind is known as Ishvara. And this marks the difference between an enlightened person and an unenlightened person. An unenlightened person says, I did it. I exercised my free will, and I did it. The enlightened person says, it was done through the free will in this mind, which is a manifestation of Ishvara. Look at the difference, massive difference between those two statements. One is, I did it. That I, of course, is ego, ahankara. I did it. But that ego that claims to have done it, that ego is wielding free will given by whom? Your ego wields free will given by Ishvara, Just as your hands are given by Ishvara, your mind, your eyes, etc., your free will is given by Ishvara. So suppose you really get it. If you really get it, can you say, I did it? You can't say. Why? And let me give the example I've given several times. Let me give it one more time, and then we'll go back to our text. I sit here before you each week teaching. In a very real sense, I don't teach. And I'm not joking with you. This is my experience. I don't teach. Why? Whatever I have to teach is invented by me or given to me. All right? My capacity to communicate is invented by me or given to me. Given to me. Even this mind with will. Right now, the will part is thinking, what am I going to say next? Right? There's that process goes on in the background. What am I going to say next? What next? What next? Where should I go next? That whole process is given to me. If everything is given to me, I can't say I'm teaching. Teaching takes place. It takes place through the means of this body, through the means of this mind, through the means of this free will. But that ego, that one who says, I am Swami Tadatmananda, that one cannot say, I'm teaching. Because that one is just another thought anyway. The one who says, I'm Swami Tadatmananda, is just one more thought in my mind. Thoughts don't teach. So really speaking, Ishvara teaches. Ishvara teaches how, by making this mind work, by making this free will work, by making this mouth and vocal cords work, and in that way, Ishvara teaches. So where is Swami Tadatmananda's free will? It's not Swami Tadatmananda's will. It's Ishvara's will. That's the idea. Everything is Ishvara. Hands, mouth, intellect, and free will. Everything is Ishvara's. And that's really what this verse means to convey. Is this lofty perspective of enlightenment. Everything is in Ishvara's hands. Now, one last comment, also based on a question that came up before we returned to our class. Suppose I am not quite enlightened. Close, not quite. And I say, Swamiji, if everything is in Ishvara's hands, then I guess I don't have to exercise my free will. Whatever happens in my life is not my responsibility. It's Ishvara's response. You just said, everything is in Ishvara's hands. It's not in my hands. So therefore, I'm not going to exercise my free will if everything is in Ishvara's hands. Do you see the problem with this? We're talking about someone who's not quite enlightened. Someone who's not quite enlightened still experiences free will as being my free will. Someone who is not enlightened and has the experience that this is my free will, that person has a responsibility to exercise that free will properly at all times. For an unenlightened person, better say, unenlightened sounds so negative. For one who is not yet enlightened, how's that? For one who is about to be enlightened, for that person who still possesses identification with the body, mind, and senses, as long as you say, this is me, as long as you say, this is my body, this is my mind, this is my intellect, this is my free will, if that's your perspective, you have a responsibility to use your body properly, to use your mind properly, to use your free will properly. Properly means according to Dharma. When the day comes when you can say, this is not my body, this is Ishvara's. When you can say, this is not my mind, this is Ishvara's. when you can say, this is not my free will, this is Ishvara's. When the day comes when you really are fully enlightened, then what about you? Then does your free will disappear? What disappears is the my-ness of free will. When you're enlightened, does your body disappear? I hope not. When you're enlightened, your body exists, but it's no longer my body. Got it? When you're enlightened, does your mind exist? Yes, but it's no longer my mind. When you're enlightened, does your free will exist? Yes, but it's no longer my free will. It's all Ishvara's. Okay. This is rather a long interlude here, but I think you'll agree. It was quite important. We went back and we reconciled free will with these teachings. So now that we've understood it completely, with the blessings of Swami Vidyaranya. So you can see we're going to have a nice study in September when we study his text. Really excellent text. Okay. Now, we can return to our text. We're almost at the end, but not quite. So, we had finished verse 67, so we'll continue with verse 68. So, where are we in the text? Sri Krishna has concluded his spiritual instruction. Now, Sri Krishna is praising this text. And specifically, in the next two verses, 68 and 69, Sri Krishna is going to praise the teaching and study of this verse. Next three verses are going to, Sri Krishna praises the text, Sri Krishna praises the teaching of this text, and Sri Krishna praises the study of this text, having concluded his spiritual instruction. We'll continue with verse 68. Yahidam paramam guhyam, yaridam paramam, madbhakte shvabhidhasyati, madbhakte shvabhidhasyat, bhaktim mayi param kritva, bhakti mayi bhaktim mayi param kritva, bhaktim mayi param krit, mame vaishyatya samshayaha, mame vaishyatya samshayaha. Did you see how I corrected myself? Bhaktim mayi, there's no pause. Why? It's a short vowel, and it's not followed by a conjunct consonant. So these are some of the rules of chanting. You can't pause there. You can't say bhaktim mayi, and then sometime later you say param kritva, not in chanting. Okay. So here, Sri Krishna praises the teaching of this Bhagavad Gita. He says, idam paramam guhyam, this greatest secret, idam, this paramam, greatest, guhyam, secret. This greatest secret. Remember our joke about this? What is the greatest secret? The greatest secret is if you shout it out loud, no one gets it. It remains secret even when you tell it. That secret. So, idam paramam guhyam, this highest secret, yaha, the first word, and abhidhasyati, connect those two words, subject and verb. One who gives. Yaha, one who, abhidhasyati, one who gives. One who gives what? Idam paramam guhyam, this highest secret, which means the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita. One who gives the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita to whom? Madbhakteshu, unto my devotees, unto those who are devoted to me. Why does he say only unto those who are devoted to me? It's kind of a shorthand expression, refers to the prior verses. It's a shorthand way of saying those who are able to hear, those who are ready to hear, those who are adhikari, remember that expression? Adhikari, qualified student. So madbhakteshu, literally, unto those who are devoted to me, it suggests unto those who are qualified students, unto those who are ready to listen and understand the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita. Yaha abhidhasyati, one who gives this most secret teaching unto those who are qualified students. What about that person who to give the teachings means to teach, right? To give teachings, to give this teaching of Bhagavad Gita means to teach the Gita. What about that teacher, the teacher of the Bhagavad Gita? Bhaktim mayi param kritva. Param bhaktim, the highest bhakti, the highest devotion, mayi, unto me, kritva, gaining that highest devotion to me. Who is gaining the highest devotion? We're talking about the teacher. The teacher gains highest devotion. What is Sri Krishna saying here is that not only the students are blessed by the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita, the teacher himself or herself is also blessed. Why? Teaching is sadhana. Teaching is a spiritual practice. The reason I'm sitting here is because Pooja Swami Dayananda instructed his students. What did he get? In fact, at the end of each 3-year-long course that Pooja Swami Dayananda conducts, one of his final parts of instruction, he tells everyone, okay, you studied well, now go out and teach. Why does he tell his disciples to teach? Because it's part of their ongoing spiritual practice. Our spiritual practice didn't come to an end at the final day of our 3-year-long course. Our spiritual practice continues. How does that spiritual practice continue? Through teaching. If teaching were not a spiritual practice, I wouldn't be sitting here. This is a blessing for me, every bit as much as it is a blessing for you. Assuming it is a blessing. I don't know whether or not it's a blessing for you. Only you can determine that. One thing I'm absolutely clear about, though, is this has been an incredible privilege and blessing for me. That's absolutely clear. So that's what Sri Krishna is saying here. Bhaktim mayi param kritva. Through the process of teaching, one gains this very profound devotion for Sri Krishna, for Ishvara. And because of that profound devotion, and because of being absorbed in these teachings of the Bhagavad Gita, what happens to that teacher? Mam eva eshyati. Eshyati, that one will reach. Mam eva, that person will reach me indeed. Asamshayaha, without doubt. Without doubt, that one who teaches the Bhagavad Gita will gain profound devotion and will reach me, without doubt. Don't get confused that it's only through devotion that one reaches. We've studied all of these chapters, so we understand that devotion in and of itself is not the means of reaching in this very profound sense, but rather that devotion is essential in gaining the qualifications, in gaining the preparedness for the spiritual wisdom to go in. When the spiritual wisdom goes in completely with the help of that devotion, then one reaches. One reaches the Lord, asamshayaha, without any doubt whatsoever. Further, he says, Nacha tasman manushyeshu, nacha tasman manu, kashchan me priyakrittamaha, kashchan me priyakrit, bhavita nacha me tasmad, bhavita nacha me, anya priyataro bhuvi, anya priyataro bhuvi. Again, praising these teachings, praising the teaching of these teachings, praising the dissemination of the Bhagavad Gita, he says, Manushyeshu, among people, Nakashchit. These words are all jumbled, so I'm just going to unjumble them. Manusheshu, among all people, Nakashchit, there is none, may, for me, who is Priyakritamaha, there is none who is more dear to me. Nakashchit, none, may, to me, Priyakritamaha, there is none who is more dear to me, Manusheshu, among all people, there is none who is more dear to me than whom, Tasmat, than him or than her. Who is him or her? Prior verse, the one who teaches. There is no one more dear to me, Sri Krishna says, than one who teaches the Bhagavad Gita. Not only is there no one more dear to me now, this is he's teaching Arjuna, but he says, Bhavita, and in the future, Nachame, Anyaha Priyataraha Bhuvi, Tasmat. And for me, Tasmat Anyaha, other than that one who teaches, there is Name, there is no one Priyataraha, no one more dear to me, Bhavita, in the future. Bhuvi, in this entire world, I'll paraphrase the whole verse now, in this entire world, there is no one more dear to me now than the one who teaches the Bhagavad Gita, nor in the future will there ever be anyone more dear to me than one who teaches the Bhagavad Gita. Does that mean that somehow a teacher of the Bhagavad Gita has Sri Krishna's special special love, special grace? Not a special love or grace. This verse is really to be understood as stuti praise. Why? Sri Krishna understands that this verse, this whole Bhagavad Gita, is going to be read and studied by many in addition to Arjuna. Sri Krishna has that perspective, I suppose, as he's teaching. As he's teaching, he knows, in addition to Arjuna, other people will also hear this. For example, as I'm teaching right now, this verse, I know that these classes are recorded and they're put on our website. And I'm surprised. I get emails from people all over the world saying, Swamiji, I'm listening to your lectures, they're wonderful, and then they ask questions and all of this. So it's just that perspective, knowing that these teachings are being disseminated and they will continue to go out. So that's what Sri Krishna is praising here. He's praising the dissemination of these teachings. And if you're asking why does he praise the teacher so much, it's not that the teacher is somehow more... The teacher is not more holy than anyone else. Absolutely. That's not what Sri Krishna is saying here. What he is saying is he wants to encourage all of us, not just the fellow sitting on the seat. He wants to encourage all of us to teach. All of us. So if I am blessed by teaching the Bhagavad Gita, why can't you be blessed by teaching the Bhagavad Gita? Then you'll say, but Swamiji, I can't teach like you. Okay, I can't teach like you. We all have our own styles. We all bring our own perspectives to the Bhagavad Gita, and we can share these teachings as we understand them. I share these teachings as I understand them. You also understand. According to your understanding, you too can share these teachings, and that's exactly what Sri Krishna is praising here. And he finishes that thought with the next verse. He says, Adhyeshyate chayahimam, Adhyeshyate chayahim, Dharmyam samvaram avayoho, Dharmyam samvaram ha, Jnana yajnena tenaham, Jnana yajnena. Ishtasyamiti me matihi, Ishtasyamiti me matihi. imam dharmyam samvadam. Imam, this. Dharmyam, dharmic, sacred. Samvadam, dialogue. Dialogue between whom? Avayoho, between us. Who is speaking? Sri Krishna. Speaking to whom? Arjuna. So this samvadam, this dialogue, avayoho, between us, between Sri Krishna and Arjuna. Yaha adhyeshyate, one who studies, and pricking up from the prior verses, one who studies or teaches this sacred dialogue between Sri Krishna and Arjuna. What about one who studies or teaches this sacred dialogue? For that person, jnana yajnena tena, by that study or by that teaching, tena, by that jnana yajnena, beautiful word, by that worship in the form of knowledge. Jnana, knowledge, yajna, worship. Sacrificial worship. Jnana yajna, worship in the form of knowledge. If you thought that at Arsha Bodha Center our worship follows the Bhagavad Gita class when we do arati, that's not exactly right, is it? Because what are we doing right now? We're not doing puja. But puja is only one of many forms of worship. Havan is a form of worship. Puja is a form of worship. A form of worship is when we connect to Ishvara. That's a very loose term. What do you mean by prayer or worship? Prayer or worship is to be connected to Ishvara. What are we doing when we study this text? It connects us to that Ishvara, to that God of the cosmos. Therefore, to study or teach the Bhagavad Gita, Sri Krishna himself calls it jnana yajna, worship in the form of knowledge. Very famously, some of you know that Swami Chinmayananda, my Paramaguru, chose to call his public lectures, when he started giving public lectures in the 1950s, 1960s, I think, 1960s. When he started giving public lectures, he called them jnana yajna. He was the first to use that term. That term comes right out of the Bhagavad Gita, comes out of this verse. So that worship in the form of knowledge, worship of Ishvara through your personal study, or worship of Ishvara through sharing what you've understood with others. Notice that definition doesn't restrict it to gurus. Doesn't restrict it to anyone who has been formally trained. That was a point I made in the prior verse as well. You can share whatever you've understood with others. The only restriction is what you haven't understood, don't share that part. Then it's fine. It's absolutely fine. What you haven't quite understood, then put that part aside. What you have understood, by all means, you share that with others. Sri Krishna praises that as jnana yajna, worship of Ishvara in the form of teaching. And he says, tena, through that study and teaching, aham, I, ishtahasyam. There are two meanings, ishtahasyam. I become dear to that person, or I become worshipped by that person. 30 seconds for our Sanskrit students. If you're not a Sanskrit student, ignore what I'm going to say for 30 seconds. The past passive participle, ishtaha, is derived differently from two different roots. It can be derived from the root ish, to desire, ish, ichati, to desire. It can be derived from the root yaj, to worship. Therefore, ishta can become from ish and mean desired or loved. Ishta can also come from yaj, meaning worshipped, as a past passive participle. Okay, you can listen again. Okay, so it means that both meanings are fine. So by study and teaching of the Bhagavad Gita, I become dear to them, or I become worshipped by them. I am worshipped by them through study and teaching. By the way, that latter meaning is better. I become worshipped through your study of the Bhagavad Gita and through your sharing of the Bhagavad Gita, through that act which Sri Krishna calls Jnana Yajna. Through that Jnana Yajna, Sri Krishna becomes Ishta worshipped. Ishta Syam, I become worshipped. Iti me matihi, thus is my conviction. My conviction, my perspective is what? Through the study and teaching of the Bhagavad Gita, I am worshipped. Worshipped, why? Because I, Sri Krishna, becomes known through these teachings. Okay, enough. By the way, your homework assignment is said very nicely in this verse. Jnana Yajna, your study of the Bhagavad Gita, your sharing of the Bhagavad Gita with others. Again, you share what you know. This is the homework assignment, and when we meet next week, we're almost done. We have 8 more verses. So in another class or two, we will conclude the entire Bhagavad Gita. All right, a couple of quick announcements. Tomorrow, Sunday at 6:15, we have our satsang question-answer. If the weather is nice, we'll meet outside in the garden. Please join us. It's very nice. I asked for volunteers for lawn mowing, and we now have enough volunteers for the lawn mowing. Thank you for the volunteers who are helping. I'll mention just in passing, that saves the ashram several thousands of dollars over the course of a summer, right? Think about it. If you hire a kid to mow your lawn, it might cost you, I don't know, $20, $30, $40. To mow our lawn costs several hundred dollars. Anyway, so thank you to all the volunteers. It really helps us a lot. Can we have our gardening today? Yes. Okay. If you'd like to volunteer in something, not pushing a lawn mower, but rather going to the garden, maybe pulling some weeds and cleaning things up, there's a gardening volunteer project. It'll follow our RT today. And they could use a number of volunteers. They also have a nice lunch for you. So if you're free to stay back, you pull some weeds and eat some lunch. Don't eat the weeds and pull the lunch. I don't know. You're not going to make that mistake anyway. Sorry, I'm in a silly mood. Library will be open after class, and we'll conclude with our prayers.